tell us when you came out, where you came out, and how you came out?
Okay, I came out in 1969 when I was, I don't know, I was like 18 or 19. I had moved to Buffalo a year before then. Came out in a relationship with a woman who I was in therapy with. And we were friends for about 6 months, and she was a lesbian. But I didn't really, I had repressed my sexuality so much that I didn't really know what it meant. she said that she was a lesbian like about 3 times to me, you know, and I just went, da, da, da. Well, that's nice, you know, I'm an atheist. I didn't know what it meant. So then we were friends for about 6 months, and then she kind of point blank put the question through me. Just a little hard to avoid.
What was the question? Can you want to do it?
Yeah, we should be lovers. What she said is that we were lovers. She was pretty smooth about it. She said that we had been lovers for 6 months, and we did everything but make love. And that was a drag. So we became lovers. And I was lovers with her for about a year after that, a little later, maybe a little longer than that. So that's how I came out. Before I was out, I was asexual. I never had any kind of relationship with men. Around the time that the people that I knew, my peer group or whatever, I didn't have too many friends, I was pretty much an outsider. Around the time that they started dealing with their sexuality, I started gaining weight really quickly. And that was pretty much my strategy for how to deal with my sexuality until I could get it together to come out. So what I did is, I had a pretty good sense. I was chubby when I was young, and I had a good sense that people dealt with fat people as if they were asexual. Men do. Women don't. Men do. And women tend to, too. Because that's pretty much what's, yeah, I think so, a little bit more than is true. Or find, a lot of women find fat women unattractive. But not as much. I mean, for men it's a real big deal, right? So that kept men away from me really good. I mean, I gained about 60, 70, 80 pounds within a year when I started to think about my sexuality. And so it was really easy to be asexual, and that was the way I dealt with it. And I still think that it was a really wonderful strategy, and it worked so well for me that I can't say that I really regret it, having gained the weight then. So by the time I had moved to Buffalo, I was about 270 pounds. And that's what I call keeping a distance. The unfortunate part about it is how much self-hate that produces. You being that overweight is really crazy. And then, I guess when I started dealing with my sexuality, it wasn't difficult at all for me to start losing. So I lost about 100 pounds of it within two or so years after I came out in my first relationship, and then after I broke up with the woman that I was with. So that was my prime strategy, really. And like I said, women don't really deal with it like that, so that it was nothing to my first lover that I was overweight. She was glad that I lost weight when I did, because she could tell that it increased my self-hate to be that fat, not because it was important to her. So, and that's pretty much the way people have dealt with it in the community. Okay, so I was with her for about a year. First we lived separately, and then we got an apartment together. And that pretty much broke us up pretty fast. I didn't want to live with her, but she wanted to live with me. So I've never had a great need to live with my lover at all. It's not like an ultimate goal for me, as it is a lot of women. You know, they think of that as the steady relationship is the thing they're striving for, stuff to live with their lover, but I don't. So the 2 times that I lived with my lover, I found it to be, I did it because it was important to the woman I was with, and because I thought that it might stabilize our relationship more. It might make the other woman feel safer. I don't need it to feel safe. Okay. Then when I first came out, when my lover used the word dyke, it upset me. I was very freaked out. I became friends with people working in the gay movement, people that I taught a course at College F, and I taught it with a gay man, and I met a lot of gay men and a lot of gay women through that college and through the course, and I met people in Mattachine and worked in the Gay Community Service Center, and those were my friends. And the woman that I was with was working at Women's Studies College, and so we had real different kind of political outlooks. I was very freaked out the first like couple months that we were together, like I was in love with her, but I had a hard time putting my life together and realizing that I was really gay. And then after about, well, I guess 2 months isn't that long to put it together, I started, like, I remember one morning I woke up and I said, "Do you know that I have always been gay?" She went, "Yeah." Yeah, she was, you know, and I told her about all my fantasies about women when I was growing up that I had blocked out so well, my relationships with women.
Anybody want more coffee on that?
Yeah, a little bit. Okay, so then after I had, so for a while, the word dyke really scared me because it brought to mind, like, pictures of diesel dykes and, you know, really offensive women, you know. And I guess all the things that this society portrays is what a lesbian is. And I guess I was partially afraid that I was that, and partially afraid that that's what the community was really like. And so for a couple of months, I went through that, you know. And working with people in the gay movement really helped me get over that, you know. And I remember saying that I didn't like the word lesbian. I thought it was too harsh. I liked the word gay, and I worked in the gay movement for about a year, which inevitably broke up me and my first lover because our politics were so different and because we really didn't get along that well from just when we started living together. I find that the two times that I've lived with lovers, that they tend to take you for granted if you live with them. So that's what happened with my first lover. It was like, oh, well, now we're married. You know, now I can go about my business and my life, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're wondering why you're living together, you know, besides just sleeping in the same bed. So, okay. Then we broke up and I went through a big change. Okay, when I was going out with her, I started, just before we broke up, going out to the bar. The only bar in town then that I knew of was the Villa on Main Street. And so just before we broke up, I kind of met some lesbians through there. I met a couple of my first friends there at the Villa.
We're still your friends.
Right, we're still my friends now. My closest friends are my first friends. And they were all community lesbians, although some of them were going to the university, but they were all women who had come out through the community. They hadn't come out, you know, through a course or through anything else. They just, you know, they'd known that they were gay before and then they just went to university. And I find that there's a big difference between women who come out in the community and who come out in the university. That the women who come out in the community are, I don't know, they think queer all the time. I think that's what it is. It's not a great realization to them. You know, and it's not just because they came out earlier. Because some of the women had come out later in their life than other women, but they didn't come out with the women's movement helping them. They just came out because it connected. They just knew, you know. Whereas some people come out, I guess they decide. I don't know. Right, politically, or they decide or something. I'm not saying everybody does. But, so those are pretty close friends of mine now. And I met them at the Villa, and I started going out, and I didn't like the Villa because it was a seedy place. And she jukebox music, and it was very small and very smoky, and the owner was straight, and he wasn't, right, mafia, and he wasn't there all the time, but when he was there, he, like, wouldn't let people touch, and he would threaten to throw people out. It offended him. He liked to make money off of it, but it offended him, and so he thought that he could push you around, and they charge you $1 to go in, And if you drank all night, you couldn't get off. They watered their drinks so fucking much. Which is still true in most bars. It was like paying for the privilege to have a place to hang out. But it was the only place that I knew of, that women, that only women went to. I mean, I know that at the same time Dominique's was open, and mostly older people and men went to Dominique's. And it was the same kind of thing. It wasn't a disco bar. That wasn't Disco Buffalo at all. It was just, but it didn't even have, like, the straight bars in Allentown had sound systems. You know, it didn't have a sound system, and you paid your quarter and you took your chances, and every other song was Bobby Vinton singing My Melody Amour, people stomping. So anyway, so, and a lot of young women went to the Ville, so I met some people there, women who went to the university or, you know, some people from high school. And, okay, so, at the time also that I came out, there was only one book that I knew of that was widely published, which was Lesbian Women by Del Martin and Phyllis Lyons, right? And that was the book, and it was like, people I talked to, it was shocking that there was a book that you could get that was put out by the mass press that you could, like, get at a store, you know? Right, and all that stuff. So, I became involved in the Gay Community Service Center, and also at the same time I started taking a course in Women's Studies College. And my first lover, before we broke up, she taught I guess it was the third time that the lesbianism course was taught with two other women. And it was the year that the course kind of fell apart. She taught. And so through that, I kind of became acquainted with lesbians in the college who had very different politics from the people I knew from the community and a very different way of looking at the world. And most of them, the women that I had met, had come out in the college and hadn't had to work yet, hadn't had to deal with anything except how, I mean, the university doesn't deal nicely with lesbians, but women's studies is kind of, it's like a, was kind of a free space for lesbians. And I know that originally it wasn't, because I know women who used to work in the beginning of women's studies, and there were big gay-straight splits, and people fought and fought and fought over the issue of lesbianism. But by the time I went, there was like, it was pretty okay to be gay. There were a lot of lesbians working in the college. And there wasn't a lot of harassment. There was enough women so that if there was harassment, you know, three lesbians would jump down your throat. So even if you thought it, you wouldn't say it. So it was like a free space. And so the women that I knew who had come out in the college tended to have a different view of the world than I did. That they were pretty open and out and stuff anywhere. Especially in the university, you can walk anywhere, hold hands, nobody harasses you, nobody really thinks about it, you don't have to think about losing a job or nothing, they can't kick you out of school for being queer, as long as you pay your tuition, you know, you're all right. But other women that I knew were working or had been working and didn't particularly have, like, I don't know whether it's a university outlook or what, you know, even if they were going in the university, they had been out, they'd had to deal with their family and their, you know, relations and all that shit, so, anyway. So, I took Women in Contemporary Society, and I particularly had gone to Women's Studies I went in person to pre-register to ask who were the lesbians in the collective who were teaching so that I would have a lesbian initiator. And, turns out I took a section where there was a lesbian initiator, but she had just come out, and I hadn't known that. And she didn't come out for the first third of the course. She was too freaked out to, so she wasn't much support. And the first time that it went around the room, you know, why are you taking this course, I said, because I'm a lesbian, it's really important for me to understand, you know, my life in terms of being a woman and a lesbian, and talk to other women, that women are my priority, right? And that freaked people out. And then when I did my personal history, that freaked people out. And then I had made the mistake of signing up to initiate the lesbian section. I hadn't really thought that it would be any, you know, I knew that the college was supposed to be committed to gay oppression as well as other, you know, understandings. And so my initiator still hadn't come out then. And I was feeling really freaked out about it because I had gone specifically for support, you know, and I was the only queer in the class, and I was queer. It was clear that people were doing it like that. So the first section, the first lesbianism class, when people come in and do what the gay community calls Dyke for a Day, which I guess is the lesbianism section, or I don't know what you call it, because I never called anything with Dyke for a Day. My first lover, who I'd broken up with, came in to do Dyke for a Day in my class, which totally freaked me out. And there was a woman in the Revolutionary Union? RU. At UB. Anyway, they have this line that this is bourgeois, and that women become lesbians out of reaction to sexism, and that it's a non-struggle attitude, and this and that and the other. Anyway, this woman, Bella, was in the class. And she said that, in this very nice, strategic way, and I blasted her. And the class in criticism said that they thought that it was bad that I had been antagonistic to her. After all, we all trying to support each other, you know. So I didn't come to that class for about 2 weeks after that. I thought it was all nice and good to have this class, but, you know, it was not dealing with me. And I was supposed to initiate the next class, and I hadn't. And later on, when the initiator, who was gay, came out, she came out in a potluck. And when she came out, the reason she'd been hesitant to come out is she didn't have a lover, and she was afraid that people would go into this big thing about, you know, how do you know, it's just a period of your life. And in fact, in a potluck that I was at, she came out, and they did do that for about an hour and a half, asked her questions about her life after she gave her personal history. And she had a couple of beers, and she was, I think, pretty unprepared to deal with it. And so I had to try, like I constantly tried to show people what they were doing. And they literally told me to shut up. They told me that, you know, that they had already heard what I thought. You know. So that really freaked me out, and that was the end of that class for me. I just came often enough to get credit. After that, I certainly didn't. And then later on when we dealt with, like when we were talking about socialism and shit like that, I started coming back because it didn't relate to my life and it wasn't personally threatening to me at all. And those were the things that I wanted to learn. So, could you turn away?
Oh. I can't see the top of
your head. Really? You're like a fading. Fading fast. So anyway, so then, so that was women's studies. So then I taught women in contemporary society for 2 semesters. And I didn't find that to be particularly supportive either, although I know for other women that it has been. That the time that I worked in the college, I worked in a gay organization called Sisters of Sappho. And I guess there was great political differences between the college and Sappho, although people never dealt with them. I mean, it's like the 2 organizations never dealt with them at all, but people constantly tell me in the collective that, well, there were political differences. You know, it's like, there were, that's all. So I know that there was a couple of times when I brought up in the collective that I felt like Sisters of Sappho had a speaker's bureau, and they had dances and stuff like that, and people would come from the college, would come to the dances, and they would enjoy the dances. But then when it came to deciding who, you know, how to get people to do Dyke for a Day, Sisters of Sappho was not contacted. And this happened 2 years in a row. And the second time I kind of freaked out, because there I was doing this work, and it was like, well, you can give us credit for the dances because you like them. But I guess I don't know why people either forgot or didn't want those speakers. They wanted speakers who, they kept getting speakers from the college, you know, which I thought presented, or people that they personally knew, you know, and had relationships with or whatever, that presented, I thought, a particular perspective of the lesbian community and could talk about the women's movement in terms of their lives, which is one of the things the class was trying to get across. across, but did not give an overall picture of the community. And the fact that it was selectively done like that was really a slap in the face to the organization I was working in. So I found the whole time that I was working in the collective that the reality of the other political work that I did that was specifically around lesbianism was constantly denied. And that it was like denying my life and my perspective. Right? So I had a hard time when I was there. And I know at a certain point I was doing so much work in the college during chartering that that I couldn't keep working in both places. And because I was in the university trying to finish up my degree, I ended up deciding to take a leave from SOS, and I really went nuts then. I felt like, you know, it was totally like I had no base, because the community was my base, not the university. And as much as, like, I remember that year I tried to, me and another, or two other women, but it was especially important to me at the time, tried to start a lesbian caucus in the college, and people didn't feel, the lesbians in college didn't feel a need for it. They felt like there was enough support around lesbians. I didn't, you know, like I know the two semesters that I taught, there were, the lesbianism section was never reworked the way it needed to be. And people admitted, like when they went, when we were trying to decide what needed work, that section needed work, but it wasn't important enough for people to go out and find articles and books to put into it, so it ended up being the same basic, you know, an article in or out section, and the articles that they found were always already in the college, so people, they didn't go out to find articles. They didn't about other sections either, so I didn't take it particularly personal, but I thought as a lesbian, it was, that was my oppression. That was what I was the most concerned about, and I know that when we were trying to decide what articles to put in and voting on the new syllabus, those were the first articles that I read, you know, and I would think that it would be for other people too. I mean, I understand working class lesbians would read, I would think they would read both, but not to care enough. You know, I felt that it reflected a lack of understanding of our own oppression to not find that a significant section. So anyway, so those were my conflicts when I was working in the college. Although I know other people in the college don't see them that way. So, okay, so there was Sisters of Sappho, which had started from a workshop on socialist feminism out of the Gay Community Service Center. There were lesbians working in the Gay Center before Sisters of Sappho, working with Mattachine. Not too many, because Mattachine was a male-dominated organization. But a couple of women who I know, who I knew then, who when they came out, the only support, there wasn't a women's movement to support, there was a gay movement to support them, and the gay men had supported them coming out and helped, Mattachine had helped them deal with their reality and also fight for them at different times over different issues and legislation and stuff, and so that, you know, was a definite group of people that they trusted, you know, that proved to them that they would be there for them. And there wasn't a, there had been another lesbian organization before, I know, I guess it was, I can't even remember the name of it, I know Madeline is in it, but that was before my time. So when Sisters of Sappho started, I was there, like, I wasn't at the workshop, but I was at the first meeting, and pretty consistently since then until it folded recently, except for the small period of time that I took out to finish up my degree. And even then, I would help run the dances and stuff like that. It was real important for me. And even when I started doing socialist, feminist work, I maintained the work that I was doing, the lesbian work, because I found that any place that I worked around socialist feminism did not really push lesbianism. It's not that they were against it, because I would never work in an organization like that, but that they, it wasn't a priority. So enough of a priority so that I felt that I could live. You know, so I was always doing both, you know, because lesbian organization tended to be, that's all they dealt with. They didn't deal with the rest of the world and other people's oppression or how it was going to get better, you know, because lesbians are not going to have a revolution, you know, and make everybody's world all right. So I did both, pretty much. So SOS started from this workshop in which I, which was open to men and women, and I guess there was one man who was so obnoxious at that the men were asked to leave. He threw a cup of coffee at someone at one point because they told him to shut up, finally. And I guess there was a couple of women there who had to be restrained. And his friends, you know, got him out in time. And then there was, people talked about how there was an obvious need for a lesbian organization. And so I worked in SOS for about a year and a half. I think maybe a year and a half, 2 years, while they were still working in the gay center with Mattachine. And that was pretty hard, because although I had come out in the gay movement, and that was work that wasn't as hard for me, I knew gay men. And I knew their strengths and weaknesses, like a lot of people who had just come out and stuff. I don't know, we all figured that the potential was there for gay men to be less sexist, but they were still men, and they were still sexist. And their willingness or unwillingness to deal with sexism was pretty personal. It didn't have to do with them being gay. It's like, you know, whatever other pushing they had had in their background or whatever. So it was a hard time, us working together. And Mattachine was very hierarchical. I mean, it had its president and this and that and the other, and they could make a decision in 15 minutes. They'd just have to call up two presidents, you know, two people on the board, and make a decision. And they had a hard time dealing with Sisters of Sappho, which was collectively run, which you had to have a meeting to make a decision. Okay, so then there were struggles over SOS having representatives on the Mattachine board, because we were helping to maintain the center, too. But the center and Mattachine were inseparable. And there was a time when SOS was trying to get like it to be more separable, you know, that there was a gay center that we would help support and they would help support, and we wouldn't have to work in Mattachine to get to work on issues around the center together. Some kind of coalition. And at a certain point, men in Mattachine got pretty threatened, and we had this one meeting where they literally laid down the law. Mattachine is the center is Mattachine, there's no way around it, this is our constitution, we don't intend to amend it, da 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 da. And from then on it became pretty difficult to deal with them. And at the same meeting it was voted that there would be a representative from SOS, and then there was a long discussion and argument over whether that representative should have voting or non-voting privileges. The meeting was so piggy that people went back to the next meeting of SOS and knew the limitations of our working with Mattachine were just really vast. And it ended up that we did have a voting member, but there was all this discussion about it. And to the end of when we worked together, Mattachine did not understand that that member did not take decisions for the organization, that she went back and found out from the organization what people wanted, and then went back and voted accordingly. And we told them that. I don't know how many times, but they just could not get the sense of collectivity. It's not a male concept, collectivity. But women do work well collectively, and men don't. They're all, you know, into ego tripping and shit like that, and, you know, who's the best speaker. And women do that to a certain extent, too, but anyway. So what happened is, the same thing happened on the counseling staff. We had counseling meetings, and we had two representatives to the counseling committee, the health committee. And they also could not grasp that we were representatives. And that's all, that meant that we represented our constituency, that there had to be, we had to know before a meeting what the issue was before we could vote on it, so we could take it to SOS and discuss it. They couldn't understand that. Why can't you just vote for yourselves? You know, and we said, well, then you're not representatives, you know. So there was a lot of trouble around that stuff. And after this one meeting, we had several large meetings in the community to decide whether or not SOS would stay in the gay center. And the first meeting, I guess there must have been around 150 women there. There was like really vast publicity, women from all over who came to the dances, who were involved in the university, who had never been to anything else, who just wanted to talk, you know, about the need for SOS and whether or not they should meet women from Mattachine. And at the first meeting, people pretty much decided that unless it was critical, that it was important for SOS to stay in the gay center. So, but that they trusted SOS to make the decision of whether or not it was possible anymore. So for a while, we stayed in the gay center and tried to work together, and then it literally got to the point where certain members of Mattachine got up a petition that they were passing around to the gay male community, which was, in effect, said that SOS and no other gay organization except Mattachine should be in the center. And they started getting people to sign it. Now, that petition was never brought up to the board, but the knowledge of its existence and that gay men were mobilizing to throw the lesbians out of the center tore it. And then there was another meeting, and people decided to leave. And I guess it took us a really long time. After we left, I don't think the gay men realized this, but after we had decided to leave, they pretty much realized they couldn't maintain the center without us. They had been having trouble before, and so Mattachine's gay center folded when we left. And Mattachine pretty close to folded. I mean, it went from being this large center, and there'd been three centers before that, gay centers, which mostly men had gone to, like one on Elmwood, which was burnt down, and one on North, on Allen for a little while, and then this center on Main Street, that they had really needed us to, it was a big center, and that they'd really needed us to, like, for revenue, and we had had lots of workshops on sexuality and stuff like that, and it's the first time that any of the gay centers were balanced, you know, that it really served the lesbian community, because they had never served the lesbian community before, just the gay male community. So they went from being this big center and this big organization with hundreds of members to being a phone number in somebody's house. Somebody literally took the Mattachine number and moved it to their house and became Mattachine, one of the members. Several of the people who had pushed, you know, to be so rigid about the way we worked together, left town. And it wasn't their problem anymore, right? But the whole community had literally exploded, right? And gay men and women who had worked together, like the older women who had come out through Mattachine, had worked together for years, had totally polarized, so that now they couldn't work together. And so then it took close to a year. It took 8 months before SOS could find a place to have a lesbian center. And in the process of that, we went from, I know there must have been about 200 women at the second meeting. We had gone from that kind of support and people saying that they would really support us to